Does people have copies?
State Journal's here if they want to look at it.
Okay, if you need to look at it before... This is not a substantive decision we're making. It is a decision only to get all of the proposed amendments into one piece of paper.
Mr. Chairman, the ones you were referring to were the ones that related to section 13, or subsection 13, sub B. Are those the ones we haven't seen?
I don't have the amendments, Mr. Chairman.
Here's a copy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would move the adoption of the amendments that the bill be printed in gross and returned to the committee.
Okay, is there any discussion?
Mr. Chairman? I don't know. I haven't had a chance to go over these, and I don't want it suggested that I'm even encouraging this, because I have a complete set of amendments that I intend to offer either as amendments or a minority report, and so I don't want to show, if you have enough votes to do it without me, I'm going to vote no, because frankly, I think we're rushing this too much, and I am concerned about several issues that have been brought up in this bill, and so if you can, fine, I'm not going to delay you. I'll vote to get them engrossed if I have to, but I in no way want to lend support to the amendments or this bill at this time.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Roberts.
Before Senator Day was here, the acting chairman indicated that the purpose of this was clearly not to either endorse the bill or the amendments, but to get a version before us so that those who were going to testify on it would have a clean version in front of them.
Okay.
So it was not.
All right,
this is not intended to be an approval of the amendments.
Todd,
the problem was that our office has become a distribution center, really, and we're not able to handle it. And we would like for the copy center to be able to handle this business. That's the only.
Okay. I guess what I'm trying to say to you in a very diplomatic way. There are some other points of view on this committee about this bill, just support. And there may be, and probably, a minority report offered. I'm working on amendments now, and they won't be ready out of legislative council. I know you've scheduled a work session, so I want to be given time and opportunity to show either amendments or a minority report so that we have equal opportunity, because there are some different points of view on this bill.
Senator Day, an earlier announcement also was to the effect that the work session scheduled on Monday is not going to be a work session in the traditional sense. It's going to be a case of a chance for the committee to look at what the major points of contention are.
Okay.
We will not be taking formal action on the bill on Monday. And the next hearing on the bill, not work session, but the next hearing on the bill, will be the week after next.
Okay.
And so we're looking at probably at least a week and a half for a substantive
work session. I will have extensive amendments to offer on this.
Okay.
Senator Cohen?
I think it's only fair to the public that we get something printed and
yeah.
properly
I have
in
no
order
idea.
That they can either...
Yeah.
They can point to and say we disagree with or move out. So I would certainly support it.
Okay. If there's no objection then to that procedural matter, do we need to take a roll on that? Roll call. What clerk will call the roll on the motion.
Senator Cohen?
Aye.
Senator Day? Senator Hurd?
Aye.
Senator Roberts?
Aye.
Senator Starkovich?
Aye. Okay, the motion carries, and we will be getting an engrossed version probably Tuesday or Wednesday of next week. Okay. I also announced that Katie Murphy will be having a summary of the major points of the bill and the major testimony of the bill prepared sometime next week. Okay. Our administrator is going to be leaving a sign-up sheet where if you want copies of the A. Engrossed bill sent to you, you can give us your name and address, and he'll be putting that out in front here in a moment. Okay, we'll continue on with the testimony. Again, if you have some new information to bring us a new point of view that hasn't been expressed before, we would appreciate that. If not, we would appreciate you telling us so we can move on to those who may. And again, I would ask the committee members, as you have been doing, to keep questions to a minimum today. Jim Carnes.
Chairman, one thing I hope we do is allow the pros and cons equal opportunity, and maybe rotate back and forth people who are for and opposed, so that we give an equal opportunity.
Yeah, 80% of the people today signed up are in opposition to one part or another.
Oh, and it ought to be 4-1 in that favor.
That's about what it's been so far.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jim Carnes. I'm a resident here in Salem, but I'm president and general manager of International Seeds down in Halsey, Oregon. I'm also past president of the Oregon Seed Trade Association, and I've served on Oregon Agricultural Commissions for a number of years, and I've been associated with Oregon agriculture, its farmers, growers, for the last 33 years of my life. Now, presently, my company has over 19,000 acres of contracted agriculture crops: Lynn, Lane, Benton, Polk, Clackamas, Josephine, Jefferson, Crook, and Deschutes, and Union counties. We do have not only daily exposure, but constant exposure to the farmers, their agricultural land problems, the needs for preserving agricultural lands. However, we feel at this time, or I feel I should say, and I am representing myself here today, and I should have clarified that to begin with, Mr. Chairman, that I am against Senate Bill 237, because I feel, and it's expressed in the agriculture community, that we have adequate regulations on Oregon agriculture lands, which are now in effect. I propose to the committee Senate Bill 237, also 234, or any modifications there, be rejected, as it will only add additional unneeded bureaucratic red tape and administrative costs that is unnecessary, not only to Oregon agriculture, but all Oregon taxpayers. I did not intend to address the issue of the golf course that has been brought forth by Mr. Clausen. However, I was involved in that, and I would like to give you a little background also on this matter. Mr. Clausen, and this has to do with this bill also, stated that this golf course was due for a few of the faculty members. I believe this is the way he implied this. This golf course would not be for a few of the faculty members. This golf course, to begin with, is fully funded by the Gustina family in Eugene, who are in the lumbering industry. They understand the need to preserve certain agricultural lands, but they also understand what the seed industry and its meaning is to the state of Oregon in our production and exports from this state. And this particular course was being planned to be used in the training of golf course management, of turf management. Is being planned to be supported by those within the seed industry, where the various new varieties, in which right now Oregon ships to every state in the United States and over 60 foreign countries. We've even had inquiries in the last week from Saudi Arabia, where they want to put in 20 soccer fields, which they're looking at Oregon grass seed to do this with. You can say, well, what will a golf course have to do with this? Well, this golf course, to begin with, and I feel where some of the opposition is coming from, because it would allow people to play on it other than the students and the faculty. The students would be able to use this golf course at a reduced fee, but as far as the public is concerned, it would not have cheaper fees than the other golf courses, and the golf courses in Corvallis did not object or raise any objection to this particular golf course that's being built. It's also a distance of about 9 miles from the golf courses that I think Mr. Clausen is concerned with over in Albany. I am not unfamiliar with the golf course business or the turf industry, because we supply thousands of golf courses with seed products that are produced here in the Willamette Valley. Again, with the new product development that's coming on, the industry is endeavoring to develop products that require less water, that require the use of less pesticides, that require the less use of fossil fuels in the way of nitrogen fertilizers. This type of work and evaluation and experimentation was being planned and is still being planned in utilization with this golf course. It wasn't just going to be something that just for a few people to play on, and I wanted to get this straight as far as the record was concerned. As far as golf courses are concerned in themselves, and I won't address the issue of the public or private schools and churches because there's already been testimony on this, and I would like to support the testimony that has been stated on this in opposition to this particular bill. But as far as golf courses are concerned, the plants that are growing on a golf course are plants that have been grown on agricultural lands some 12, 24, or 18 months prior to that when these golf courses are being planted. It's a simple matter. If you want to turn that land back into agricultural production such as row crops, fruit trees, or what have you, it's a simple matter. You might have to dig up a few water lines, but you're not plowing concrete, you're not tearing down skyscrapers to go in and work up this land. I thank you, Mr. Chairman, for this time.
Thank you, Mr. Carnes, very much. I'm going to be shooting for as many out-of-towners here as I can identify off the list. We have a Phil Chase from Bend. Welcome. Can you please identify yourself for the committee?
I'm Phil Chase. I come from east of the mountains. I run cattle out on the high desert between Burns and Bend and have a small operation raising cattle in that fast suburbanizing triangle between Redmond Sisters and Bend. I'd like to say a few words about the use of the so-called marginal land in Oregon. Marginal land can be defined as land which has agricultural or forestry capabilities, but for one reason or another is not attractive for commercial farming or forestry. In the case of farming, this may be for lack of irrigating water, poor soil, or more importantly, an existing pastoralization that makes it impossible to put together large enough tracts for commercial operations. However, this marginal land can, under the proper conditions, be made to produce. One such condition is to operate the marginal land on a small scale through part-time farmers, of which I understand there are over 28,000 in the state. The part-time farmer is characterized as one who has a source of income other than his farm receipts and who is willing to subsidize his farm operation. He can adapt his activities to meet the conditions of his land and therefore doesn't necessarily need irrigating water, good soil, or large acreage. In fact, he probably couldn't afford to acquire and operate more than 20 acres. Raising livestock is one example of what the part-time farmer can do very well on marginal land. One of the attractions that have lured so many people to Oregon from the more settled areas of California and other states is the opportunity for rural living and the romance of raising some livestock and operating a farm. The fact that the romance may wear thin after a few years and the part-time farmer may sell out to some newcomer is unimportant. The important point is that these part-time farmers make productive use of marginal land that commercial farmers turn down. In so doing, according to the latest agricultural census, they contribute over $178 million worth of agricultural products to the state annually, and a still greater amount of trade within the state. Many people are, I'm afraid, rather look down their noses at the capabilities of these part-time, or as they're called, hobby farmers. They picture them as city dwellers who know little or nothing about farming. However, this is not the case. In fact, most of the part-time farmers at one time or another during their lives have lived on or operated farms, and many of them know just about as much about farming and ranching as a commercial farmer. Senate Bill 237, or its amendments, recognizes the existence of these marginal lands and also recognizes the fact that they must be utilized if the state is to get the maximum possible agricultural production. It also recognizes the fact that if these lands are to be utilized, it must be through small-scale operations rather than by large-scale commercial farmers. Accordingly, the bill provides that under certain conditions, land unsuitable for commercial agriculture, but with potentialities for small-scale operations, may be classed as marginal land, with the right to be divided into minimum 20-acre lots that would be commensurate with the means and abilities of part-time farmers. As a further incentive, marginal land would be allowed less restrictive uses than EFU lands. These provisions, to me, should benefit the state's agricultural industry. I am for them and endorse them as well as the bill itself. Thank you.
Thank you very much for making the trip over. Call next, Robert Wilson. Robert Wilson, looks like from Monroe, Oregon. Welcome. You identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. I'm Robert Wilson, and I reside at Route 2, Box 109, Monroe, Oregon, a small farming community in South Benton County. As I read Bill 237 since last Friday when I first thought about it and read in the newspapers that some of the farmers had gotten together and were going to really help the people of Oregon on the shortcomings that were identified by the task force last spring and summer, it was an interesting controversy that entered my mind. And as I read down through it, it became more and more apparent that it was like reading a book of pornography. But I can find nothing in Senate Bill 237 that has any redeeming quality. I think the present 237 is fraught with the right hand giving and the left hand taking away. The preceding speaker spoke to the problem that we're now going to allow these hobby farmers that the proponents of this bill have looked down their noses at and said we'll finally give them something to dig their hands in. And then we find a piece within the bill that talks to that and limits it to an acreage of something, a total acreage of something in the neighborhood of 320 acres within which 70% within this 320-acre block must already be acreages less than 20 acres. In my home county of Benton County, that's a physical impossibility. I don't think there's a single block of land that is not presently identified, or even presently identified as EFU, that would apply to. They very magnanimously say that there are marginal lands, and yet they stipulate the soils 1 through 4 are the limiting factor, or in the forestry products industry 1 through 6. Again, I would stipulate, and probably in the whole damn state of Oregon, that when you use those two criteria, you talk the entire state. But I know in Benton County that I would be hard pressed to find any block of land of any significant size at all that does not possess 1 through 4 soil capability for farming, or 1 through 6 for the timber industry. The bill is ludicrous in its offering to the small landowner. It's unique, in my opinion, in one other section of it, that any man that's in a farming operation all of a sudden magically becomes the expert within the county, and he has automatic standing to take anybody else in the county to court when they want to subdivide a piece of land or break off a smaller portion of farmland. It's just total harassment. Then in another section of the law, all of a sudden we're taking the legal system of the United States and aiming it only at the plaintiff. And I quote, In a judicial proceeding authorized by this section, the court shall allow a plaintiff reasonable attorney fees and expenses if the court finds that a dwelling established as a dwelling customarily and so forth and so forth and so forth. What the hell happens to the defendant in our judicial system? It goes on and on. I think the woman that broached the subject on the schools and the churches. Those are unique standards within the United States. They're the very foundation for which we've operated for years and years. And yet, this small group of greedy individuals, and that's all I can see that this bill is designed at, is to satisfy their own unique greed. That they will stop any and all other than their own kind. And when you can do that, then the price of the lands becomes whatever they will offer it. And they will be the ones that grab up what we have. Again, I believe that this state right now has more laws on the books than any one of us can ever interpret, and farmland notwithstanding. LCDC and the goals and the guidelines as issued under 197 and Senate Bill 100, they've been through 8 years of bastardizing. And at least right now, most of the public has some idea of what they are. And this bill takes that 8 years and throws it in the wastebasket. The task force last spring, if nothing else, and I went to three of the meetings, indicated one thing. The population wants relief. They don't want more hassle. They want some relief. There is no reason in God's green earth that a farmer with 500 acres and a citizen with 20 acres cannot get along. And we have sufficient laws on the books to see that they can get along. Last legislative session, this body and the House passed a bill called the Fair Farming Practices Act. That as long as the farmer uses prudent practices, I can't shut him down, and I shouldn't be able to shut him down. I have more than 111 acres. And if I weren't retired, this bill, I would never meet the stipulations of the 20,000 income bracket. That farm of mine, there is no physical way of it producing $20,000 a year. No physical way. And it's ludicrous to tell me that I have to let some other expert have it rather than do what I want with it. And now you lay that on a 5 and a 10 or a 15 acre piece, none of them can match what this ridiculous document is asking. Where does it all end? I think the one thing that the people during the task force review and subsequently through ballot measure 6 are asking for as an initial forward step in this whole ridiculous process. And that is something to recognize those people that own property in the state of Oregon and put it in writing and let it carry forward. Now maybe we shouldn't take a 5,000 acre block in eastern Oregon or a 400 acre block in western Oregon in the Willamette Valley that's prime agricultural soil and divide it. But we have thousands of acres in this state that it sits on true marginal land. And I don't care whether it's 1 through 4 or 1 through 6. It's marginal by its sheer size. Recognize those small-sized parcels and put a house on them. Most of the problems that land use planning is creating will disappear. And it would not cause any more consternation to the farmers if they will make up their minds to live with it. And in my experience, the vast majority of the good farmers in the state, the competitors in the state, the free enterprisers in the state, they could give a hoot less about the guy with 20 acres living next door. There was an interesting article in the paper just yesterday espousing the problems that the farmers in this state have at this moment. They're over-indebted. They're getting zero for their crops. And now we're saying all they can own is 4,000 or 5,000 acres. Bigger makes better. That's a bunch of hogwash. Bigger doesn't make better. It takes a continual mix of large and small and the competitive spirit and the free enterprise system to keep the whole thing going. And that's all the public is asking you folks to do, is give us a chance to own the very stuff that is ours. We don't want to steal it from anyone else, but we want the right to use it with some reasonable degree of flexibility. And you're constantly taking that away from us. And it's just not fair. And it's going to come back to bite you in the butt. I can guarantee you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wilson. Melvin Andrews from Corvallis.
My name is Melvin Andrews, and I'm from Corvallis. And I'm reminded of the farmer whose cows all got out in the alfalfa and they bloated, and we had to kill them all. And then the price went down on the pigs, and they couldn't make any profit on them. And then when he found out that he was going to be screwed out of his peaches, he sat down and cried. And I get irritated when these bills come up, and I have to come to Salem to defend myself and my private rights. So all I want to say at this time is that I'm against this bill, and I hope they won't pass it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Andrews. Debbie Weaver, also Corvallis. Welcome, and you identify yourself.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Deborah Weaver, Chairman of the Land Use and Environment Legislative Subcommittee of the Oregon Association of Realtors, and I'm speaking to you today in that capacity on behalf of the State Association. In deliberating the provisions of Senate Bill 237, our association committee spent considerable time in trying to search out one redeeming quality in the bill. Because I personally dislike coming before any committee with a totally negative view of any bill, I again last night spent more time in trying to find something positive to say about Senate Bill 237. I could not find it. The Oregon Association of Realtors must go on record as opposing Senate Bill 237 in its entirety. Due to the length of the bill, it is impossible to review our opposition with you on a section-by-section basis. However, I will try to articulate to you our general opposition of the marginal lands concept as proposed and contained in Senate Bill 237. First, marginal lands, as defined in Section 1, Subsection 13.
Excuse me just a moment, Debbie. You have 4 pages of written testimony.
Some of it I will try to
okay, if everybody would pick up the key sentence or two out of each of the paragraphs,
okay,
that might help.
Okay. I would like to read my testimony on the marginal lands
okay,
concept.
And we will enter the whole thing into the record as written here. So thank you.
First, the marginal lands as defined probably do not exist in Western Oregon. Using my own county as an example and drawing from my experience in that county as a property owner and a member of the County Planning Commission, it is my opinion that there is no parcel of land that would qualify as marginal lands using the standards set out in Section 1, Subsection 13A. As for Subsection 13B of Forrester and Benton...
Excuse me, Senator Roberts.
If the idea of the bill to extend additional uses to what are now exclusive farm use zones by designating part of those as marginal lands, that would certainly be apparently a liberalization of the current restrictions on the use of exclusive farm use zones. Has your organization suggested a better definition of marginal land?
I do have some recommendations in
okay.
my testimony,
Thank
Mr.
You.
Roberts. As for subsection 13B, a forester in Benton County has told me that there's no land in that county that will produce less than 95 cubic feet per acre per year. And if such a land, such land existed anywhere in western Oregon, it would be in swamp areas or rock outcroppings. That's 95 cubic feet, not 50. It is unreasonable to suggest that swamplands, rock outcroppings, or class 5 and poor agricultural soils are feasible locations for the uses allowed on marginal lands, that is, intensive farm and forest operations, part-time farms, and woodlots. Also, to suggest that a dwelling is possible is ludicrous, knowing that these types of soils cannot possibly pass required septic site feasibility requirements. Section 4, we believe, is intentional harassment, encouraging litigation based on neighbor surveillance and reporting, and then the county government's paying for the litigation. Section 5 requires that a person beginning in farming must first place a mobile home on the property, prove that he can produce $20,000 or more in income, and then he may build a house on the property. In addition, the parcel must be equal to or larger than the average farm in the county. In Benton County, the average farm is estimated to be about 300 acres, and I'm told that in eastern Oregon counties, the average is about 4,000 acres. We're wondering how a person can get started in agriculture.